From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 25th day of August 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's out of New Market, Indiana. And then later in the program, Dan O'Brien from K-State will be here to discuss the agricultural energy markets. Along the way, we'll update you on yesterday's crop progress report from the United States Department of Agriculture. And then as we close out our half-hour program, Don Day of Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming will join us to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, Hudsonville, Illinois, and Crescent City, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
On this Tuesday afternoon, futures in Chicago finished the day like this. The nearby contract in the wheat pit at $4.71 with a settlement price 0.75 cents lower for the September contract. December at $4.98 3/4, down a half on the afternoon. And the March contract at $5.18 1/4, a half lower. September corn futures 3.21 1/2, 8 cents lower. December at $3.26 3/4, down 8 3/4. And the March contract at $3.40 1/2, 8 3/4 lower. May corn 3.49 3/4, down 8 3/4, and July at $3.58 1/4, 9 cents lower. September soybean futures $10.91 up 11. November beans at $9.99, down 8 1/2 on the afternoon, and the January at $10.15 1/4, down 8 1/4. March soybeans $9.97 1/4, down 9 3/4. The May at $9.88 3/4, down 12 3/4. And July beans 11 1/2 lower at $9.91. September soybean meal at $358, up $11.80. The October 50 higher at $308.50. And the September soybean oil at $36.54, settled down 57 cents. October at $36.75, down 55. Live cattle futures, August contract from the CME Group, 85.45, 27 1/2 higher. October at $88.75, that's down a nickel. August feeders at $99.95, 115 cents lower. September down 35 at $99.97 1/2. October lean hog futures 48.30, up $1.47 1/2, and the December contract at $47.10, $1.10 higher. You are listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures have settled for the day at $72.05 in the October contract, down $2.32. September ethanol at $1.62 3/10 on its last trade, down a penny and 7 cents. Lead option natural gas at $2.87 6/10, down 4 7/10. The RBOB at $2 even, 4 3/10 lower. And the heating oil at $1.85 1/2. Down 6 8/10 today. That's diesel fuel. Propane futures 95 8/10 cents, a penny and a tenth higher on the afternoon. Gold futures at $944.50, up $2.20, and the Dow now at 9,552. It's just about 43 points higher. The U.S. dollar at 78.24 is down 0.03. And the CRB index on the afternoon at 257.36 is down 3.86 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like from our own staff meteorologist, Ed Keezer. He says tonight in northern Illinois should be mostly cloudy, a few scattered showers and thunderstorms arriving. Elsewhere, clear to partly cloudy, lows will range between 59 and 66, says Ed. And then tomorrow in the north, mostly cloudy skies, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. In central and southern sections, mostly sunny. Highs will range from 73 in the far northwestern parts of Illinois to 88 in the deep south. The extended forecast highlights scattered showers are likely across Illinois and Indiana on Thursday and Friday. Amounts should be variable, but many locations, says Ed, will pick up at least 1/4 to 1/2 inch. With more and local thunderstorms, scattered showers will likely linger on Saturday, especially across eastern and southern Indiana and southern Illinois. High pressure building in from the northwest will lead to several days of dry weather as we head into Farm Progress Show next week over at Decatur, Illinois. More on the weather at the bottom of the hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Join us this evening at the El Paso Golf Club in El Paso, Illinois, for another one of our free Illinois Public Media Agricultural Outlook panels. Tonight's meeting gets underway at 6 with a light supper, immediately followed by the meeting at 7. Panelists for the meeting include Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing. That's at the El Paso Golf Club in El Paso, Illinois, this evening, beginning at 6 with a light supper, 7 for the meeting. The meeting is free. No advance registration is required. We hope to see you there.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. On the line with us this afternoon to take up what happened in the world of agricultural markets is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Todd. Just think, a week from today, we'll be at the Farm Progress Show.
Hey, we will be at the Farm Progress Show and having a lot of fun inside the University of Illinois tent. If you'd like to drop by and see us, please do so. We'll broadcast this program live from there. And then immediately following it, each of the 3 days, we will have a panel of analysts there to answer your questions, including Wayne Nelson. So thanks much, Wayne, for making the trip over to the Farm Progress Show. Which days or day are you scheduled to be on? Do you remember?
On Tuesday, just a week from today.
Oh, you will be there on your regular day. Great. So you'll be there for this program live, and then you can stick around, answer some questions from the audience as they filter into the U of I tent on the Farm Progress Show site. What do you think they'll ask most about?
Well, I think depending on, they'll ask what our weathermen are thinking, number one, Todd. Then they'll ask, if we don't have a frost, where are prices going? And I think that's the big question. Or if we do have a frost, where are prices going? I think, and that's the big if, and we all are asking that question, but more so, will we see the early frost that cuts this harvest short?
Well, it sounds like a wide range, so give me the potential. So using what we have now, I suppose, as normal, what do you get on the bottom side if we continue to increase the size of the crop? What do you get on the top side if we have a really hard frost across most of the primary growing regions, northern Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska?
Well, I think, the whole thing is, and I think as we look at it, most of the estimates out there are somewhere in the 158 to 161 bracket as far as the corn crop goes, Todd. And, you know, we feel that probably won't be right, just for the simple fact is if we have a complete growing season, the way this crop is looking to us, we look for probably a little bigger corn crop than that actually to come out of it. But if we would happen to cut it short in a large area, we could get cut back into that 156 bracket. So, you know, that leaves a lot of variance as to where this corn price could go. We probably got 30 cents on the downside and 50 cents on the upside if we would have some real problems.
No, that doesn't sound like a terribly wide range. I guess even if we were to have problems, you would expect that we'd still have a very large crop on hand.
You know, we are told we have a large carryout, but we seem to have extremely tight situation of corn moving at this time for as large a carryout as we're talking about, and we're looking at a lot of bushels. And we also have to remember that frost damage bushels also mean that it has to move faster because it doesn't keep well. So that doesn't bode as well for as much of an increase right away as you'd like to think it might.
Hey, I had a listener write in and complain just a bit about what we were using, or what at least one analyst had been using as the break-even price for soybeans. And it was fairly low number, but I would guess within the range of the last 5 years at 7.5 or so. That's kind of the rolling five-year average on break-even. But last year, I think, was $9.26 in the state of Illinois, basis the FBFM records. So the question for you then is, when we get into the area where we've got nearly $10 beans, $9.99 for soybeans in the November contract, do producers need to pay much attention to that price? Or do they stick it out and wait and see how this crop matures?
Well, we like to feel that we should be some aggressive marketers at the, around the $10 cash mark, Todd. I think that, number one, most of these farmers have some insurance, you know, and that's what it's for, is to be able to back up their ideas of marketing their APHs, the percent that they have insured along that way. And, you know, depending on what they feel comfortable on, what percentage they are, we're not aggressively telling people to go over any of their insurance guarantees as far as marketing, but we do feel that they should probably be at least half sold at the $10 cash mark.
Mm, so it's going to be, it might be an interesting year to watch the marketings, because producers have very high break-even prices. They have crop insurance in place that's, I guess, about at those levels, I would think.
And well, we were 880 on beans for crop insurance,
right,
Todd. So basically, you know, we're $1.20 above that as far as the beans go. But let's look at the corn, 404 and 326 and three quarters. We're quite a bit below. Fact of the matter is, with just an average yield for them, they're right at the level that might start paying some insurance.
Indeed. So I guess my thought was that it might be interesting to watch producers hold on to a crop longer maybe than they might at lower levels, just because they can.
Oh, I think that we're going to see very tight holders of farmers with corn this year, because there's no reason to aggressively market something you're losing money on, because we have so many things that can pop into this market as we go along. The talk of inflation, Todd, is one of the things that could pop this market if we would turn around and see that start to happen. You know, some of the world problems, you know, as we look, Argentina, you know, talking about another strike down in because the government voted against some of the aid that they were going to give them. All sorts of things can happen along the way. So, you know, we know we've got some money made in the beans, even if you take the higher level of production costs. We don't necessarily have money made in the corn. So I look for farmers to be tighter holders of corn.
Is there anything else that we ought to talk about before I let you go for the afternoon?
That's about it today, Todd.
All right. Thanks so much, Wayne.
Thank you.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, and he'll be at the Farm Progress Show with us next week in Decatur, Illinois. That is Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Of course, we'll be in the University of Illinois tent broadcasting live from there, both our pre-opening and opening market reports, and then the closing market report in the afternoon. And there will be some panelists there in the U of I tent, and there will be some panelists as well in the AgriGold tent. It's all at the Farm Progress Show next week in Decatur, and Dave Dickey and I both hope to see you there.
Support for Illinois Public Media comes from Syngenta, featuring AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids, designed to give you up to 38 bushels more per acre if you have rootworms, and an average of 3 more even if you don't. More information on Syngenta's AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids is at agrisuretraits.com.
One quick note, if you'd like to listen to our programming content again and you can't hear it on the radio station, or you can't get to it on our website at willag.org, you can always dial this number. It's 217-333-3434. We call it our mobile analyst portal. We post a few numbers and some of the analysis there each and every business day at 9:15, or rather 10:15 and 3:15. The phone number to call is 217-333-3434.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the closing market report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Tuesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. Please visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Yesterday afternoon, USDA released the crop progress report. It showed nationally 57% of the corn crop was at or beyond the dough stage. That's still 9 points behind last year, 22 points, or over 1 week behind the five-year average. Cooler temperatures throughout the major corn-producing areas of the country, of course, slowed development in the crop. Development to the dough stage was over 3 weeks behind normal in North Dakota, 2 weeks behind normal in Illinois, and 1 week behind normal in Iowa, Michigan, Minnesota, Pennsylvania, and South Dakota. Together, these states represent over half of the corn acreage planted for the 2009 crop. Meanwhile, acreage at or beyond the dent stage advanced 9 points during the week, leaving progress at 18%, 7 points behind last year and 25 points behind the average. Despite those below-average temperatures, the most rapid denting progress was evident in Kansas, where 26% of the crop reached the stage during the week. Overall, 70% of the crop was rated in good to excellent condition. Still a 2-point improvement from last week, 6 points better than last year. Beneficial rainfall helped to improve crop conditions across much of the Corn Belt. 97% of the soybean fields were at the blooming stage or beyond as we ended the week. That's on par with the pace from a year ago, but 2 points behind the 5-year average. Pods set for the beans evident in 85% of the crop now, 1 point behind last year, 7 points behind the rolling 5-year average. The biggest development delays were seen in the Corn Belt, where rainfall combined with cool temperatures slowed crop growth. Pods set was over 2 weeks behind normal in Illinois and a week behind normal in Indiana and Michigan. Overall, 69% of the soybean crop rated in good to excellent condition, 3 points better than last week, and 8 points better than a year ago. And finally, on the winter wheat harvest neared completion, with producers actively reaping fields in Idaho, Montana, South Dakota, and Washington. 97% of the crop now harvested, on par with progress from last year, and just 1 point behind normal. And that's a look at this week's Crop Progress Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
Listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. This is Illinois Public Media. On the line with us this Tuesday to take a look at the agricultural energy markets, as we do each week, is Dan O'Brien. He's an Extension agricultural economist at K-State Research and Extension. He joins us to take up what's been happening in the world of ethanol. In particular, there's been a release that you were part of, Dan, I believe, talking about the capacity and production capacity of U.S. fuel ethanol plants from 2005 to 2009 and what that means for the future of the corn-based fuel. What did you find?
Well, it's interesting, I guess, to start out with, look at the various states. Illinois, where you're at, has about 10 plants listed by the Renewable Fuels Association. But the average per plant is far and away larger than those in any other state. So there in Illinois, you have 10 plants averaging about 118 million gallons, and a couple of them that are quite large. I'm sitting in Kansas, where we have 12 plants, but we average 41 million gallons. So a disparity, and I think a lot of that is reflective of the productive capacity of the crops in various areas, and probably to some degree when the plants in Kansas were built. Some were built fairly early on when the technology was, technology was aiming towards plants of 30 and 40 million gallons per year, whereas some of the Illinois plants, even early on, were of a much larger scale than those in Kansas. And it's interesting to see how that established market share for those plants is panning out for Illinois. And even when you look at in Iowa, 82 million gallons per plant on average for 40 plants. Nebraska, 25 plants, but a bit smaller, 61 million gallon per plant. And this would be in terms of nameplate capacity. So the other area of the nation that has sizable plants would be your neighbor in Indiana at 83 million gallons at 11 plants. So if anything, there's probably a bit of a Eastern Corn Belt tendency to build larger plants, but again, you've got some tremendously reliable supplies of feed grains there to deal with. So,
yeah, and the other thing that I make note of, despite the size of the plants, Iowa far and away produces more ethanol than any other state in the union at this point, at 3.28 billion gallons, and by comparison, Illinois at 1.18 billion gallons.
Right, Nebraska, of course, in that mix at 1.5, and Minnesota, upper Midwest, 1.08 billion gallons. Even South Dakota, Indiana at 908. So, if I guess we have quite the geographic concentration of ethanol production, and of course that follows corn, corn and other feed grains, grain sorghum particularly. So we do have some geographic disparity around the nation in terms of where these plants are located and just where the capacity lies at.
Well, while the capacity is there, total capacity, let me go back and look at that graph. Total capacity is what for production in the United States now?
Well, the last number that I've been able to pull together, I and Mike Wolverton out of K-State, is just under 15 billion bushels of capacity. That would be both what's actually been opened in terms of nameplate production capacity for plants and that planned. I think the actual amount is something like 12.7 billion gallons of capacity actually built, and another, a total by the time you add in the amount that is still planned, at least as reported publicly, they're just under 15. And that 15 billion gallon capacity figure is a pretty important one. That's the renewable fuel standard mandated by the U.S. government to be attained by 2015. And frankly, when you look at the amount, course over time that we followed in actually opening plants and in planning plants, it seems that 15 billion gallon figure has been a pretty important benchmark. If anything, it looks like we're probably towing up next to it, but are hesitant to go over that because, again, that's the amount of production nationally that's frankly protected, you know, and supported by U.S. policy. So it'll be interesting to see in the future just whether if ethanol returns to strong profitability, if we have the impetus then to go over that renewable fuel standard amount.
And it appears that since we have the ability in-house at this point, either built capacity or capacity on the drawing books for the 15 billion gallons, that it would be unlikely for new ethanol production plants to come online anytime soon, any place, based off of just that one mandate, unless Congress were to step in or U.S. EPA and increase the mandated mix, maybe from 10 to, well, they've talked about as much as 15, but 12 or 13%.
Well, that's right. And, of course, we're mainly looking at grain-based fuels here. If cellulosic ethanol were to become established then if we were to go on and meet the targets for cellulosic use, then we would go beyond 15 billion capacity pretty readily. But again, the best way to say it is the logistical issues that we're working with and the technological needs to quote make all that happen are still coming. Lots of people are working on it. So over time, if cellulosic ethanol does become successful, we'll go far beyond 15 billion bushel 15 billion gallons capacity. But time will tell as to just how fast we get there.
Anything else that we ought to take up today before I let you go?
No, I think the industry has gone through a time of profitability challenge, especially from December through March of this last year. And it'll be interesting to see what happens in terms of corn markets, energy markets, and in the next several months and how that might affect the profitability of the ethanol industry on down the road.
Dan, thanks so much.
Thanks a bunch.
Dan O'Brien, Extension Agricultural Economist from K-State Research and Extension. I'm Todd Gleason, back in 2 minutes when we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast with Don Day.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
It's National Banana Split Day. It's also Feast of St. Louis the Ninth, patron of distillers. On this day in agricultural history in 1840, Joseph Gibbons received a patent for a seeding machine. In 1900, Sir Hans Adolf Krebs was born, a German-born British biochemist. He received the Nobel Prize for the discovery in living organisms of the series of chemical reactions known as the citric acid cycle, the basic system for the essential pathway of oxidation within the cell. In 1921, Peter Cooper Hewitt died, an American electrical engineer. He invented the mercury vapor lamp, an important forerunner of fluorescent lamps. And in 1935, Curtis Fletcher Marbot died, an American geologist and one of the founders of modern soil science. He taught geology at the University of Missouri while also working for the Missouri Geological Survey and directing the Missouri Soil Survey. In 1910, he left Missouri and he was the soil scientist for the U.S. Bureau of Soils for the balance of his life. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon dawn day of day weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Weather here in the Midwest has been really magnificent. Great for us outside, but the corn would like a little heat. It's getting warmer here, though. We're going to stay that way?
Well, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to hold it very long. We are going to be heading into a pattern that late this week, and especially this weekend, is going to trend cooler. In fact, for the next 10 days, temperatures over all of the Midwest, the Corn Belt, the Great Lakes, are going to average a little below normal with our mean temperature. Nothing bad, but certainly we're not going to be getting the amount of heat unit accumulation that you'd expect to see in late August. And with those cooler temperatures, will be a fairly good chance for showers and thunderstorms, especially in the northern and western areas of the Corn Belt.
And then if you start to look, Don, at what's behind all the cold air, does it translate into anything other than we've just got a cooler air mass around for the moment? And I guess what I'm really asking is, if you look into September, does it mean cold air temperatures that will end the growing season earlier than usual?
Well, if you were to go to Las Vegas, you would probably have to say, with the way the summer has gone, and from what we're seeing up north in those higher northern latitudes where there has already been some pretty cold air. In fact, Fairbanks earlier this week and this past weekend, Fairbanks, Alaska, some record cold temperatures. So there's already cold air up there. So I would say the odds are 60-40 at least that the growing season may end a little bit earlier than normal for a good chunk of the nation. There's only been a few places during the summer season that have had hotter than normal temperatures with any consistency, and that would be the West Coast and the Pacific Northwest. The rest of the nation has had a cooler than normal summer or temperatures about normal.
In Fairbanks, is this what we call the pooling of the cold air, so it pools together and then drops down sort of very quickly and causes a problem, or does it happen in a different way?
Well, as the daylight hours get shorter in those northern latitudes, the opportunity for the cold air to start piling up again as the season change gets better and better. And since we really have not had, over at least the North American continent, any persistently hot temperatures, it's a little bit of a head start for the seasons to change. Since we're cooling temperatures off in those northern latitudes that weren't really warm to start with, it's kind of giving the fall season a little bit of a nudge this year.
All right, and if you would take a look at other places around the planet for me, I know there's been some concern about the monsoon season in India, and then you might want to check in on China, too.
Well, let's first start with China. They're not unlike what's going on here. The forecast over the next 10 days for China is wet in most areas and temperatures in most of China. We'll be looking at temperatures averaging below normal. So a lot like the Corn Belt in the Midwest, China's going to be looking at a similar situation. Monsoon rains in India look to be a good bet. In fact, the forecast for precipitation over all of southern Asia, India, is for some pretty wet conditions here over the next week to 10 days, as to be expected.
Don, we appreciate you being with us for the day.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Tuesday afternoon. You have a great day. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Tom Testel and Morris at 815-941-2184. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.